Tune 4, The Positive Mind, coming up.
Everybody, Kev O'Donoghue and Julian Joy Ello.
Hey there.
Back with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, strategies, and guests. Try and help you lead a more positively minded life. And we have Independence Day coming up. Remember, that's what it's all about, Independence. July 4th, everybody says the 4th of July, but does anybody really say Independence Day? And what is it, Independence Day? It's about getting yourself free and being free. We live in a free land, and sometimes we live in traps, mental traps of our own making. And people say, well, you know, what do therapists try and do? And I think, Kent, what we try to do is we try to get people to be free.
Mm-hmm. And Kent Robertshaw is here. Dr. Kent Robertshaw is, of course, in the office.
We were going to introduce the guest. Kent is here, a free man, telling us. Do you agree, Kent?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of therapy is trying to get to the truth, and the truth will get you free, you know? So getting to the truth of what goes on with your behavior, your thinking and feelings, and there's something about that that can be difficult at times to be honest and face, but the truth will set you free.
And much of the history here in The Positive Mind has been about tracing your history and the traps that your history gets you in. Armand did a great series called The Drama of the Gifted Child, which we will talk about next week. But I recommend the fourth show for you to listen to, because it's all about getting free of your traps, of your childhood traps. Today we're going to talk about another trap, or a different type of trap, a trap of negative self-talk, because we often get caught in the loop of negative self-talk. I think it's something like, human beings, on average, give 7 negative comments to 3 positive ones. And human beings wouldn't be doing this if they didn't carry around some negative self-talk of their own, criticizing themselves. So we have a tendency as human beings to be negative about ourselves, and sometimes that can go really deep and be a trap. And there's a psychiatric term for this, and we want to talk about that today, and what you can do to get free of it. So, Kent, what is this trap of negative self-talk?
Well, the psychiatric or psychological term that we use when people get stuck in really self-talk, talking about their past behavior, you know, feeling that something, some behavior they did, something they did, they feel a sense of either shame or guilt. And the mind then ruminates, goes over and over the past. So rumination is really talking about, here we are in the present, here you are, you know, at 2:04 on a Wednesday, but you're going back to this morning or yesterday or last week, some thought you can't get out of your head about something I did wrong, that I didn't live up to some expectation I have of myself, or something I did bad, something that was not thoughtful, something that wasn't kind, something that was mean to another person. So both of those big categories of shame, not living up to expectation, and guilt, hurting somebody else or not being kind, are places that people can go over and over in their mind, like a needle stuck in a record, keeping them stuck.
You know, you gave a great example of yourself.
Yeah.
And it wasn't so much shame, or maybe it was, but talk about a recent one of your own.
Well, you know, and this is, again, trying to be humble here, despite knowing all this and having knowledge about self-talk and reaching out to friends. I was on the way to a performance the other day, cutting through Central Park, kind of being a little wild, and sure enough, I got my coat jacket stuck in a fence that I was hopping over on the way to a performance, and I ripped my coat jacket. And all I can tell you is during the performance, all I could do, my inner voice, my Jimmy the Cricket on my shoulder, was going on and on about how stupid that was, and how ridiculous, and how I just ruined the suit, and how, fill in the blank, lots of mean stuff. And, it was very hard to shake while it was going on. And of course, it ruined the performance. I wasn't available and mindful in the performance. My mind kept on going back to a self-beratement, 50 shades of gray, of beating myself up over something 2 hours earlier, which most importantly didn't do any good, right? It didn't do it. It didn't undo and magically bring me back in time so I didn't rip my suit. All it did was ruin a couple of hours in the performance.
Right. And here you're a psychiatrist trained, gone through medical school, all of your training, and still you couldn't get yourself out of this web, this ruminating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even using some of the tools we will talk about later, about meditating, reaching out to friends, all the above, nothing seemed to work. It only took a little time for the inner parent or inner Jimmy the Cricket to finally relax and let myself go and move forward. But there was a lot of, again, wasted time, sort of torturing myself over something that was now in the past and didn't make any sense, as Beretta, those of you who remember that TV show, shoulda, coulda, woulda, and 50 cents will get you a cup of coffee. And that's a lot of rumination. Shoulda, coulda, woulda, over and over again.
So you're saying it always tracks back to the past. We're going to go through this because I do want people to call us and tell us about the traps that you're in. Tell us about a common rumination of your own, because I think people tend to have a similar one most of the time. There's one like, I'm not a perfect person, or I did that wrong. There's that kind of rumination, right? Is there other types, like not living up to a standard or not being a certain kind of person, this sort of perfectionism? I could see that being really a repetitive rumination.
Yeah, it seems like, again, people, interestingly, people who hold themselves to very high standards, right, which sounds kind of Donald Trump grandiose, right, hold themselves up to say, I don't make mistakes at some level. They feel they should never make a mistake. They should never do anything wrong. And then any simple human mistake, since all human beings are filled with mistakes, they cannot forgive themselves. And they go on and on and on about, how did I forget this? Or how did I walk out of the house without remembering this gift? Or whatever minor misdemeanor of mistake that they did, again, the judge inside their head is giving them a life sentence or 50 lashes with a whip over something really rather minor about, again, some mistake or something they could have done different or something imperfect. Or I think people, it even gets irrational to the sense where I'm driving downtown and I run into traffic on, one of the 7th Avenue rather than 9th Avenue, and I'm beating myself up. Why didn't I take 9th Avenue? There's a traffic jam on 7th Avenue, as if at some level I should have been clairvoyant. I should have been able to see that there was going to be a traffic jam there, that it gets that irrational that you're beating yourself up over human mistakes, choices that we make that turn out to be wrong often.
I feel like a lot of people, or at least I know myself and a lot of my close friends, will kind of beat themselves up over not being literally psychic. Like, there's something about like thinking that, oh, I could have known that this person was going to say this, and now I didn't. I didn't think ahead. I didn't plan ahead so much so that I would know that there would be traffic on 7th Avenue. Like a kind of level of, it's like, how could you beat yourself up over something you just didn't know? And it's almost impossible to know. Sometimes what somebody else is going to say to you in response you think you're going to know what they're going to say because you know them so well. You know the situation. You can read it so well, but you just can't. And then we end up beating ourselves up over it. And it's just, that's out of our control.
Right. I think, again, the feeling, I think a lot of people who go around depressed and down and sad with negative thoughts about themselves, we therapists sometimes will get them to sort of say, well, what exactly are these negative thoughts? And the negative thoughts are often ones of ruminating about a whole list of mistakes and things they would have done differently if they had the chance to do over again, and regrets and the like. And how we know that all of this is harsh and excessive has to do with the exercise about, you know, asking yourself, whatever it is you're currently beating yourself up over, even the example I gave, you know, Kent, what if Kevin told you, called you up and said he was going to a concert and he was being a little wild and jumped over a fence and ripped his suit? What would you say to him? Would you go on and on about what an idiot he is and so stupid he always makes
for blah, 2 hours?
For 2 hours, 3 hours.
Rare. Right? There are few people that would do that to someone else.
Exactly. Yes. No, in fact, I have the perspective when it's somebody else to sort of say, like, that wasn't the smartest thing in the world, but, you know, like jokingly or something like that. But come on, we all make mistakes and, you know, you gotta lighten up a little bit. It's not like you killed anybody or set an orphanage on fire or anything horrific like that. You know, it was a minor little thing. And that's one of the exercises we may get to later on that people need to develop to sort of get that perspective of, oh, maybe I did make a mistake, or maybe I did something that was slightly not very thoughtful or perfect etiquette or something like that about the past. But if somebody, Julian, Kevin, anybody told me the identical story, I would be very encouraging, loving, and supporting that it wasn't a big deal. Yet somehow we are trapped, as you started.
Right. And how does that disparaging feelings towards oneself begin?
Like the origins of that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think as therapists, we know that. I think the ruminating itself is a surface of something deeper. I mean, ruminating is different than regrets, let's say, right? I mean, when you have regrets about that divorce or that marriage or that college or that thing that you did, this is heavier and deeper stuff. Ruminating seems to me to be more on the surface, Kent.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, ruminating is also a verb, so we're ruminating about some kind of regrets maybe we have, right? We have some idea that we say, well, okay, well, I wish I hadn't done that, and then we just sit there and experience the rumination for hours, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I think rumination tends to feel like it's more recent, let's say, but certainly there's a unrelentless quality that feels about rumination. Again, you know, all I want to talk about, all I want to think about, you know, again, a needle stuck in the record of my brain, if it's not distracted, it just wants to go back to what an idiot I was that I didn't go down 7th Avenue instead of 9th Avenue because it took me an hour and I missed the plane or something like that, or ripping my suit or whatever. It's like it just goes over and over, like picking a scab psychologically of something in the past that we did that we seem to want to just go over and over about. And I do think that's on the spectrum because it's all about history. You know, it's all about, you know, part of us, again, try to be psychologically mindful in the present and the now, you know, the power of the now.
Right.
And the past is something that, again, living in, obsessing about, thinking about, particularly with a negative slant, is very destructive. And so rumination could be about recent events or even a couple of weeks or so. And as you said, regrets, and the famous psychoanalyst Erik Erikson, who started the identity crisis, but he talked a lot about middle age being a time where people can spend a lot of their free time thinking about their whole lives, ruminating, regretting the choices they made. And if I had only done that, and if I had only done this instead of that, my life would be so good now. And now I'm an idiot because of ..
So you're saying a couple of things. One is that it's not abnormal. It's totally age appropriate and normal to ruminate at times. particularly middle age or otherwise, but also that there's a technique that if you get caught deep in ruminating, you can ask, you can bring your friend along and sort of say, well, wait a second, you know, why are you beating yourself up so badly, so much over, you know, a torn jacket or something like that? And, you know, put it in perspective. Maybe it's not such a serious thing. So there's a remedy to the ruminating and rooting it out. But what is spotlighting?
Well, spotlighting again is one of the aspects of ruminating where, again, let's say last week's show that I did with these two guys, I misspoke or something or stumbled or I used bad grammar. And for the last week, I've been going on in my mind about what an idiot I was. And I'm sure everybody in WBAI is laughing about my poor grammar. And that's what they're focusing.
Yeah, that's what all of the programming has been about in the last 2 weeks.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And spotlighting. Ken Robitra
said. Exactly. It's spotlighting. Is really just that. Like, again, I'm thinking that there I am, the center of everyone's universe, in a spotlight, and that minor little mistake that I made, that was real, perhaps, that minor mistake, everyone noticed, and everyone is fixating on, like me, stuck in my head, but it's also stuck in their head. And I've certainly treated lots of people that they come out of meetings or talks or something like that, you know, cocktail parties, something like that. And the next day they're spotlighting, meaning the one little minor little thing, they put their foot in their mouth, they said an off-color joke that didn't land that well, whatever like that. And yet they're thinking the whole party and everybody's thinking poorly about them, which is really because they're magnifying this minor little episode in their mind as something much bigger and more significant to other people than it really was.
Yeah, that happens a lot as performers. I mean, I guess sometimes we're literally in the spotlight, but a lot of friends of mine will do these tape auditions, right? And sometimes the hair, you'll see the video, you work on it for 2-3 hours, and then there'll be a little speck of something in someone's hair on the left side, and you say, oh my God, this is why I'm not going to get the role. Because there was this thing, it was there, and you think about it, and then when you don't get it or you don't hear anything, you say, it was because there's a speck of dust on my hair. That's what it was. And it happens all the time to everybody. I mean, I think I feel like it gives us a reason for why, or for a reason, or for something to blame, really. That we can have a logical reasoning behind why we've failed or why we've not done what we hoped. I feel like that's why that ends up happening to me personally. It's based on me finding a logical reason for it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when I think one of you asked, what's the origin of this? And most importantly, I think a lot of people who listen to the show understand they do it a lot more than other people. And trust me, lots of people in relationships are very aware that either their boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, or wife is constantly, constantly in this place of obsessing about what did I do wrong or how they feel depressed or sad about something. And they're often in that position of being consoling and comforting and telling them the reality, which is it wasn't so bad. And you know, there's really two ideas about things that happen in the childhood that are related to why people tend to have more of a ruminating, self-hating sense of beating themselves up. One's pretty straightforward and simple, which is children often have parents growing up that actually are often very harsh and critical. Mm-hmm. And, you know, children, particularly 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 year olds acting like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 year olds, which means they spill things or they do things wrong and they're impulsive and everything like that, are often angrily shamed, yelled at, worse, even hit for things that are really kind of minor. So there is an idea that our Jimmy the Cricket, or as Freud called it, our superego, is built in our psyche about our parents' reactions to mistakes two failures, two doing things wrong. And many and many a patient that I've had over the years, I will say that, you know, here you have your critical mother and explosively angry father right on your shoulder. You don't, they don't, you've moved to Hawaii or whatever, you've got, and yet they're with you. They're with you psychically, and they're still abusing you when you do normal human things. And when you, we talked about this went on for a couple of hours with my suit, it can go on for days. And you think about this too, that sometimes parents, something, you do something wrong. I spilled water, you know, at a dinner table or something like that over Aunt Sue's dress when I'm 5 years old. And then my parents bring it up, you know, a week later or something like that. Again, both things are true. The harshness of it and the fact that it goes on. And not surprisingly, once Jimmy the Cricket can be very mean and harsh and critical when you make a mistake, and it can go on for days, right? You're just not forgiven. You're not out of jail yet.
Is there something psychiatric about it being chronic like that? I mean, most people, if they get a good night's sleep, will get over the ruminating of the day before, let's say. But if it continues about the same thing, I mean, one would think that if it goes on for 3 days, 4 days, 5 days about the particular incident, you know, when we're talking about this, it strikes me that all of this is just a camouflage. Ruminating is a camouflage for something else. Something else must be going on underneath. And of course, when you talk about parents and having critical parents, it's a, you know, when you're ruminating, it's kind of a way to keep your parents around,
right?
You know, even however bad or terrible they might have been, or, at least having them around is better than not having them around. So ruminating could be a form of keeping your parents around,
absolutely,
in a strange kind of twisted way.
Absolutely, I think
that's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about, you know, being yourself and being who you want to be is letting go of an abusive internalized parent. And you nailed it, Kevin, that there's part of us psychologically that wants to stay enmeshed, connected to, even though it's bad, a bad parent. But as they say, bad breath is better than no breath, right? Meaning a bad internalized parent may be better than no parent. True. And so psychologically, it's true that sort of letting this go, you're really leaving your parents, you know, 20 years old, 70 years old in therapy, whatever age, and you're becoming your own independent person, not letting your parents have so much control over your life, but in another way, less attached to them because you're now you, not just how they wanted you or had you made.
Right, and you have to end up finding your own kind of discipline, your own voice in your head, which is just your voice.
Your own negative self-talk, which is really just your own, not your parents' negative self-talk for you.
So what happens when you've embraced your own self-talk? Does it stay negative, or does it really turn to a more positive sort of motivating force?
Hmm. Yeah, because I think, again, if you don't learn from history, you're destined to repeat it. So evolution, biologically, there's probably a reason why when we perceive we've hurt somebody's feelings or we did something wrong, that, again, I'm not supposed to jump over fences getting to Lincoln Center for a concert. That's what's supposed to be the learning of why my mind goes to the fact that I've ripped my coat, because that wasn't very sharp of me. I won't do that as a middle-aged man anymore, jumping over a fence. It's a learning thing to go over what mistake I just went over, or even something interpersonally, something I did guilty. Oh, I shouldn't tell off-color jokes to nuns and priests or whatever I did. I should be like, I won't do that again. I feel a little guilty, which gets to, again, healthy shame and healthy guilt with mistakes and doing something less than perfect in relationship, not toxic, ruminating, beating up shame or guilt, healthy shame, healthy guilt.
So the process of what would be happening, sorry, Kevin.
No, you go ahead.
The process of what would be happening after one rips their coat would be to healthily be shameful about what had just happened. So they sort of say, okay,
put it in perspective.
I ripped my coat. This coat was $400. Okay, so this is a lot of money. I can get it fixed for this much money. I'm definitely not going to be jumping any fences with nice clothes on, or maybe jumping fences at all.
Again.
But now it's done, and I can say that I'm probably not going to do this again. And what's done is done, kind of, right? Or what do you sort of feel like exemplifies that kind of healthy shame and healthy guilt?
You nailed it. And again, I think when your reaction is identical to what you would say to a friend or loved one, you're good. It's time to stop therapy, right? It's like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and
so when you can give yourself a friendly talk, then you're genuinely pull yourself out of the spiral, whatever it is you're in, then you know you're over. You're done with your psychiatrist or your therapist.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think, again, we were talking a little bit about the spiral, and, you know, what makes it almost a self-fulfilling prophecy is that when you're stuck in rumination, then it's worse than you're just hurting yourself. It's not like you're hurting yourself and you're functioning well. You're hurting yourself with this negative voice in your head about something you can't fix. And often you're then stuck doing something positive, being a good therapist. Again, I can't be a good therapist or a good parent if I'm in my own head dwelling on what an idiot I was or what I said to my grandmother, or, you know,
right.
I'm not in the moment and doing my best. So again, it worsens not just the pain you're putting yourself through about it, but then you're not functioning and then causing more and more problems in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really interesting, which is why therapy is so valuable for those people who can't give themselves that perspective a lot of the time.
You said that there was another reason, though. What if you didn't have bad parents, or, you know, or critical parents? I wouldn't say bad parents. No parents. But what if you didn't have a critical parent? What other factor could lead to ruminating or chronic ruminating? I mean, if you're the son and daughter of a ruminator, you know, you're being modeled ruminating all of your life. You can see your own parents' worry and ruminations. Good chance that you're going to pick that up as a grown-up. But what if that didn't happen?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when it comes to a parent who's got anger, critical, emotional, what we call emotional physical abuse, that kind of parent, it's very easy to see how the parent on the shoulder is emotionally critical, emotionally abusive.
Right.
But what both of you are hinting at, that sometimes it does seem, and this is probably for a lot of people listening today, that rumination seems to be that what they're constantly struggling with, maybe unconsciously, maybe they're not aware of it, is a constant sense that there's something not good enough about them. Like that's at the core. And that, again, all they need is the most minor little episode in their life to latch on. Again, as if there's some kind of framework in their psychology all the time, which is, I would never join a club that had me as a member, right? I don't really like me.
Yeah.
I don't feel good enough, or I feel there's some part of me that's bad or unlikable. Some core sense of that. And it is believed that some of that core sense of feeling bad and unlikable has to do with early childhood, probably before 8 years old, about how a child is what they call egocentric, which means the world revolves around them.
Every child thinks.
All children.
And anything that bad that happens in this world is my fault.
Everything bad is their fault.
Okay. Well, we're going to come back. We're going to take a musical break. And we're also going to take your calls. We want to take your calls because I'm curious about how people pull themselves out of ruminating. So if you ruminate and you can identify with what Kent is talking about here, we're going to talk about some solutions to this towards the end of the show. But we want to hear if you have any magical prescriptions on how do you get yourself out of ruminating. A, do you ruminate? Have you ruminated? Do you have a favorite ruminating? And B, how do you get yourself out of it? So call us here at 212-757-5555, 212-757-5555. Remember, it's all about getting free, and that's what we're trying to provide here and do, and we want you to be free. So tell us how to help people get free. How do you get yourself free from ruminations? 212-757-4488.
Paranoid as hell. There's nothing I can do. Yesterday's tomorrow. My dreams are never true, but somehow I'll keep on loving you. Emotions are attached, 'cause something happened that no one can help. I broke out of my shell just to find that I don't belong. I broke out of my shell just to find that I'm living by myself. Ooh, paranoid as hell, there's nothing I can do. But somehow loving you.
(212) 757-5555. Give us a call, and we'll take your questions after the break. People.
That's the name of a band, Phony People?
Yes, it is.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. Wow. Little
they must ruminate whenever they're honest
they
and
do
truthful.
A lot of,
they ruminate.
Do a lot of rumination. A lot of rumination. And you're listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And we're talking about rumination. Rumination, self-talk, negative and positive guilt and shame. And we've actually got Jackie on the line. We're going to put you right through.
Hey, Jackie.
Yes, hi there. Great discussion.
Thank you. I'm so glad
I flipped to your channel this morning, this afternoon. Two comments. The first one is I no longer ruminate. I did when I was a lot younger and a lot less emotionally healthy, and I find that the more emotionally healthy you get, it does not become work to not ruminate. You just don't ruminate.
Right.
It's just an offshoot of mental health. My second comment, though, is that aren't there times where it is completely appropriate to ruminate? What if you've done something really horrible, for an extreme example, you've killed someone? Shouldn't you then be ruminating? And isn't that actually a sign of underlying mental health?
Good for you. Absolutely. Kent, do you want to take that? Because I totally agree with you, and thank you. I did have a question about do you have a friend on your shoulder now that you're emotionally healthy? But let's handle this question, Ken.
Well, citing our show we did a month ago about sociopaths and psychopaths, as if God or Darwin has a sense of humor, for people who obsess about guilt way too much about things that are very minor and slight, they're offset by people who, as you're saying, remarkably have very little guilt over things they should appropriately be feeling guilty about. And yes, there's pathology there. I think Aristotle talked about the mean in so many things, and this is a perfect example where mental health lies in the mean of healthy shame, healthy guilt, No Shame and Guilt, Is Donald Trump Perfect, Sociopath, Never Make a Mistake, and then, you know, Woody Allen, crippled with self-doubt and self-hate because everything I do is wrong and my movies are miserable and I never, no one likes me, whatever, whatever, is probably not healthy. So some healthy shame and guilt, but absolutely, one should feel an appropriate amount of shame and guilt. And just as an aside, you know, one of my work with addictions, I often need to push people a little bit about how they seem to be in denial about how their addictions affect other people, particularly their raising their children. And yes, a little bit of healthy guilt that your alcohol and cocaine is not a performance-enhancing parenting drug is probably very helpful to get them to stop.
Jackie,
yes,
go ahead.
Yes,
go ahead.
Yes. I was gonna, and this is, of course, part and parcel of the narcissistic personality.
Yes,
they can never understand what the repercussions of their own actions are and think it's everyone else.
Absolutely.
So, listen, this is a great show. I'm going to listen to you talk, and I'm loving it.
Thanks, Jackie. Keep calling us.
Thank
you
so much,
too.
Jackie.
Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Bye now.
Bye. Yeah, that's. I wonder how she got emotionally healthy. I was going to ask her that, you know, because she clearly sounds like a joyful person. But healthy, you know, obviously if a client comes to into your office and they're guilty about something and are ruminating every week about it, and it's true, it's something they've really done that they feel badly about, we're not going to label that as like, you know, chronic ruminating that's wrong or that's unhealthy. Mm. This is a healthy ruminating.
Again,
they're trying to get through this.
I would, again, what I said before, you know, there are times where people in my life will tell me something, and then as a friend, I will say, oh, that was a pretty big screw up that you threw a pizza pie at the judge's face at your trial or something, whatever it was, you know, like, again, just to keep it real. And we've all known that where it's like, you know, you're even as a friend saying something. And then clearly, right, if a friend, you know, burnt down an orphanage or did something, or, you know, an air conditioner, you know, fell out of a window and killed a stranger or something like that, you wouldn't be like, oh, don't be so hard on yourself. You know, that's pretty
neglectful.
How
can I help you solve this problem? Yeah. Right? How can we help you get over this?
Yeah. So again, I think the key is if you're talking to yourself is similar to another person, it's on the same level of crime and punishment, then you're probably in a very healthy place. But yes, obviously bigger mistakes and bigger screw-ups probably demand a little bit more of a Jimmy the Cricket saying, hey, this is not okay. Maybe you should feel bad a little bit.
Does there come a time when ruminating is biologically or physiologically based?
Yeah, it's a thought that, again, part of that we talked about the psychology and the childhood issues that lead to rumination.
We have another caller.
Oh,
James.
Okay, sure.
Let's take another call.
Is this James here, or is that your name? Yeah. Hello?
Hello. Hello.
Hey, we got
Hello?
You on the line.
Hi.
Hey there. How's it going?
What's your name?
This is David calling.
Oh, it's David. Great.
Hey, David. How are you?
Hi. Good, thank you.
Good.
I appreciate the topic of the discussion today.
Great.
And I wanted to offer some experience that I've had with rumination. I didn't have a parent who was overtly critical, but there were other psychological issues that probably led me to a lot of rumination. And one of the approaches that I've taken is to do meditation. For years and years, I've done meditation. And I found that after really a number of years, it would suppress the rumination temporarily, but when I wasn't meditating, it would come back. And so I started looking for other avenues. And what I have found in the last few years is some psychological techniques and approaches, including, well, I'm calling it psychological, but some Buddhist teachings that helped me look at what my thinking is and helped me look at what I call my self-talk, which I guess is like rumination, and how to use my awareness of my self-talk and to sort of transform it. So that's an example of some psychology that's been helpful to reduce my rumination.
You hit on a remedy that we came across in our research. Let me ask you this. You sound like you can meditate on a dime. Can you meditate, like, as soon as you get caught up in a spiral of ruminating?
No.
You can't?
No. What I have learned to do is to do some simple breathing techniques, which can start to take me out of my head and into my body.
Yeah.
And then from there, if I'm able to do that, depending on how strong the rumination is, then I can start to meditate, only because I have some years of experience.
Oh, exactly. I've spoken to our listeners before about meditation personally, and if you can't clear the mind, as they say, and get to that kind of Zen meditation place, you're absolutely right, David. You can start with the breathing and focus only on the breathing, and by focusing on that one thing, it begins to get you into that zone. So thank you so much for that solution. We actually have a bunch of callers coming in, and I really appreciate your hearing you on the air. Thank you so much for calling in, David.
Call again, Dave.
Wonderful. Thank you for taking my call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So meditation is one of the answers, isn't it, Kent? Breathing, and if you can't clear your mind, at least breathing and getting in touch with the rhythm of your breath can really calm things down, and the mind will follow.
Again, I think if they'll have me back, we're going to talk about worry next week, which is tomorrow in the future.
Right.
So this is, the history and...
Ruminating's about the past and worries about the future.
And both of those things, both this week and next Wednesday's topic, you can imagine the now. It's a very spiritual concept. The now, meditation, all these techniques are about getting people centered into the moment, and the moment is fine right now.
We have Theo on the line. Theo, is that you?
Hey, how are you guys
doing?
Thanks good
for
show
calling.
Today.
Oh, thanks for
Boy,
calling.
I've been ruminating all week. You know, I have issues. You know, you raise your prices as a therapist, and you say, geez, I don't know if I should have done that. The guy questioned it. What should I do? You know, and all week long, no one responds back to me, of course. The guy doesn't say anything to me. And I go see him again, and he doesn't say anything. But all week long, well, you know. And then I start saying, okay, so what are you going to do about this? This is something that's deeper that's not really here. And then I really realized that, first of all, anything I'm saying now has nothing to do with me. And everything I've learned is something in some books. Everything old is new again. It seems to repeat itself. And sometimes there's a serendipitous thing that happens as I follow the experience, almost like the ripped cord, the ripped jacket leaping over the fence. And I bring it to another conclusion. I just follow it along. Like if you would have went to a tailor, and this tailor said, oh, how are you? And, oh, you want to go here? Oh, I have these tickets for the airlines, and I could save you $1,500, is what happened to me.
Wow.
That happened to me when a mirror got ripped off my car by a construction company, and I followed this thing through. I had to go to a small claims court, and I had to get the mirror from the dealership, and I didn't want to go to that dealership. I said, let me go to my dealership. My dealership tells me, oh, you're going to Argentina in a few months. I have an agency down in Forest Hills. You should try this one. Ended up saving $2,100. I mean, so you don't know how things work in this world. But I would tell you this, that one of the things that helps me to get rid of ruminations is when I open up my sternum. I'm a yogi kind of guy, so when you open up the sternum, it brings you to a more alert place, and as you just indicated, brings you to a place of the now and the moment. I mean, I wasn't listening to what you just said, but that's what it's about for me. So I think what you're saying is right on target. Thank you.
Thank you, Theo. You sound like a great ruminator. You know?
Oh, am I ruminating? I love to ruminate. My God, it goes on. It's endless ruminating. And I think it comes a lot from the age I'm at, and there was no authority figures were always big. You couldn't share anything with your parents. The teachers were always right.
Mm.
The police was always right. So, you know, I have all these things. And like they say, if you go over something 21 times, you keep hanging out in the pain of the rumination, eventually it will dissipate and not have the same powerful trigger effect.
Just before you go, tell us how to open the sternum.
Ah, okay. Well, you know, like yoga is something that is available for everybody,
right,
and everybody's in a different position, so we don't want to have everybody being doing this and hurting themselves, of course. So I would say lying on one's back and putting some soft blankets in the middle of the spine and supporting the head with another blanket and just opening up the shoulders to the floor when you're lying on your back and kind of elevating for about 4 inches the middle of your sternum and chest. And that brings you to a more oxygen coming in,
mm-hmm.
more awareness to your body, and it just kind of keeps your chest open. So that's the simplest thing to do.
Thank you. That's on our list now. We didn't have that one, Theo, so thanks. You're adding to our list.
Absolutely.
Super.
Keep calling
super.
Us.
Yeah, that definitely falls under the category of sort of grounding yourself and finding a way to make sure that your body is physically in the space and physically your mind and your body are sort of in the same plane. Whether it be the sternum, whether it be your breath, whether it be meditation, or just physically just grabbing something and holding and feeling the ground under your feet. It kind of brings you right back into your body and into the what we call now, you know.
And everybody knows that feeling. Everybody loves that feeling. I mean, how often you get it, sometimes it comes naturally. You don't have to do anything for it. You don't need to open your sternum. You don't have to practice your breath. You don't have to meditate. Everybody knows what it's like to be in the now. You know, it's just getting out of it and being out of it for a long time that becomes so frustrating trying to get back to it. So I like your recommendation on what to do.
Absolutely. And 212-757-5555 is that number that everyone's calling, so we can hear a couple more phone calls here about the topic today: rumination, self-talk, being in the now, and sort of figuring out what the healthy way is of going about all this
Kent,
stuff.
Do people become addicts and get into addiction because they can't handle their ruminations?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we're talking about all these wonderful healthy ways to deal with rumination. Catch yourself in the self-talk. Talk to a friend or therapist about what you're ruminating and get a reality check. Meditating. One thing we haven't mentioned, exercise. All these things are healthy ways. The two ways that lots and lots of people do to get rid of their rumination is they go to a mood-altering substance or behavior. And it works, right? So if you're in this negative place, whether it's a scotch at the end of the day, whether it's calling an escort service if you have a sex addiction, whether it's going to get a Snickers bar or mindlessly going into the kitchen to
grab
something. Turn on the TV. These are all ways to get out of a negative self-talk place, but very destructive. And then probably the most common and destructive is shaming and criticizing another person. So one way psychologically that people get rid of this negative self-talk is to go to another person and criticize them, and that makes people then feel better. But it's not I'm
belittling,
okay, you're okay.
Others, right.
And we know chronic blamers are clearly transferring their own pain inside onto somebody else. We have Ronald on the phone.
Yeah, sorry, we lost you for a bit, Ronald, but here you are on the air. You there?
Yes.
Hey,
I
Ronald.
Mean, people said so many things that they basically...
Sorry, Ronald, can you lower your radio in the background? We're hearing an echo.
I do have the radio a bit low.
You gotta turn it all the way down or off.
Or it's going to start echoing through us.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's how this electronic thing works.
What? Hello?
Hey there.
How's that?
Not so great, but tell us your experience. Go ahead. We'll see if this works.
Let me walk away from the base
Thank
of
you.
The phone.
Thank you, Ronald. Thank
that
you.
Might help. I don't know. Anyway, basically, can I just mention this? I practice true Buddhism, which is a modern-day true Buddhism where you chant. And then the three aspects, faith, practice, and study. Because, you know, you got to know what you... Without study, there is no Buddhism.
Right.
Without practice and study. But I think I remember when it said without study, it means nobody up there is shooting any information down at you.
Right.
There's no such thing. It's up what you learn. And you learn from these shortcomings that actually materialize. If you look at it as something that, wow, let me, if it keeps happening, like me, I keep dropping things while I'm making my food in the kitchen and this and that. You know, in other words, any way you could improve yourself when it comes to your coordination, or if you find you're jumping up, rushing to go get popcorn to come back to your seat like the gentleman that ripped his jacket, wow. The thing is, we can look at so many aspects by recognizing, you know, in other words, maybe you're too concerned with what the world thinks of you, and that might be a revelation.
Yes, sir.
In other words, maybe I mean, you have some understanding, you have some wisdom, so you know you might be short of the mark. Right. But not because of the world around you, but because what you want to bring to it, which is the only thing that gives us value, the fact that we bring to life. And you got to be well for that. So what you see is awry, try to correct it. And you can never separate yourself from your mother and father, because that's in your genes, that's in your blood, and in you establishing yourself, that brings joy to them. You have bestowed Buddhahood on them, even though they're deceased.
Right.
Because you cannot improve and separate that from your parents.
Beautiful.
I don't care if they were drunks and alcoholics.
Right.
If it caused you to want to step beyond that, in any way you can't, and you should not want to. And any improvement on your part, forget about it.
You've learned.
Carry on the cake.
you've learned to embrace all of life. You've learned to embrace your parents. Is that right, Ronald?
You got to, the only way you're going to embrace anything is you got to see yourself actually improving. In other words, attending to something that you see in you know, maybe if you often drop things because you throw them haphazardly, is that you're putting everybody else ahead of you.
Beautiful.
And
said.
Does it bring the value you want? You still got to pick it up off the floor, put it down, put it in the right place more carefully, and then you notice that all your nerves and muscles are more in play.
Beautiful,
when you actually do things in accord. All this you look at when you chant, Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. Embracing the reality of cause and effect through all the vibrations of your life. Please forgive me, I'm a little nervous.
No, it's okay.
You're terrific.
Right
now. Ronald,
thank you so much for calling in and sharing that with us.
I got to thank you that you put up with my barrage. But, you know, the words from one to the other do, basically everybody was saying pretty much that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And it sounds like you really carry the torch of your parents in a great way. And you've kind of turned that into a positive
thing. My parents were top notch.
Thank you so much for calling, Ronald.
We were going
to try to grab one more, but we're actually coming to the end of our show.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Ronald.
Very much. Stay well. Continue.
Thank you for calling in, Ronald. And you've been listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI. We've just got a couple more minutes, so we're going to actually have to put off the last of our calls. Thank you, though, for holding, Donnie, and maybe you can give us a call next week. But Kevin, let's kind of like put this all together.
He was talking about awareness. And Ronald was talking about bringing your awareness to or tending to what you're doing. And then the other thing he added was about a chant. I wonder, Kent, this is a new idea. Saying something like a mantra or a chant or something, externalizing, you know, the obsessional kind of spiral that ruminating can be. Of course, you know, what do you think of that idea?
Well, again, I think that chanting or prayer and all these things are grounding people into the present. And there's, again, a very, dare I say, spiritual concept that all spirituality can only help you if you're in the present, right? The now, the every concept of spirituality can only help you deal with what's going on right now, and anything that can pull you into what is immediately of concern or what you need to do around you at this moment is a very positive thing, and you can get lots of help. But if you're going into reruns of your life, you're all by yourself. And as we'll talk about next week with worry, if you're in the future, you're getting a screenwriter and a director and manufacturing some movie, a script about tomorrow and future worries, that you're all by yourself. You can't get any help. It's only in the now. And again, if it's meditation, chanting, or whatever, you're in the now. And then there's lots of help available.
Right. So a few of the strategies, we started the show by saying strategies, ideas, strategies, and guests. And Kent, you've been a great guest today, and we really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much.
We love the idea of learning to talk to yourself in a friendly way, as if, you know, you have a friend who can review your behavior for you.
Right. If you can't find a therapist or a friend to talk to, make that for yourself and allow that. Don't be extra three times harder on yourself than you would be on the person that you care about, who's a friend or family member.
And there's nothing like getting it out and saying it to a friend, actually, or to a therapist or psychiatrist or somebody, just to get it out.
Yeah, and we're actually reaching the end of our show today here. You've been listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Kevin O'Donohue, Dr. Kent Robertshaw, and myself, Julian Joiello, here. I'm going to be playing a little bit of music, which you definitely will be recognizing coming up. Just a little taste of something because we had Armand's second year anniversary of his passing over the weekend. Yeah. So thank you so much for listening, and enjoy the tunes. And make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. only on WBAI. Mm-hmm.